Tide is right, it's time to be stirred. The time is now, the winds have changed. Read the signs, no time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Hey, welcome everyone. God bless you for tuning in to The Winds of Change. This is Wednesday, so this is Father Coy's Wrinkling Your Brain once again, and hopefully calling you to take better and a more humble approach to what God wants in our world today. I say a humble approach because so much of fixing or getting back to where we need to go, back to where God wants us to go, requires humility and accepting changes and turns in our life where we could admit something was not right, something was wrong, and commit ourselves to really following the good Lord and his indications, especially in the moral sphere. And the moral sphere and the doctrinal sphere are intertwined constantly.
You just read them, right,
as a matter of fact, that's one of my favorite themes. We should not separate what God has joined. And unfortunately, we're constantly separating. It's one of the great errors, I think, in our spirituality and our church today is the pulling apart the doctrinal beliefs in God Himself, in the Holy Trinity, belief in Jesus Christ, and the moral principles that flow from that deep love for a God who is three persons in one. I've said that before, and I've criticized those theologians who have tried to relegate a moral aspect of faith to a kind of second-class citizenship. And there's only one sense that could be done, and that is through mercy and forgiveness. When something is recognized as a sin, and then it's forgiven.
Wow.
Through God's mercy and through our mercy.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
You could say that the mercy of God triumphs over the wrongness of the sin, shall we say. And if you say that's separating them and delegating your moral principles to a second-class citizenship, then so be it. But in the normal course of our life, they go hand in hand, and we shouldn't be blind to the fact that there's this incredible moral relativism that is just so prevalent. I got to start off right off the bat with things going on here in Illinois. For those of you who are listening in Illinois, there's two special things going on. I think there was a vote yesterday. I'm not sure if it will continue today, but one is in reference to parental notification. There are many who are trying to keep parents from having to be contacted when a minor goes for an abortion. Here's something from This is from Family Illinois Right to Life Action. Okay, so the legislation to repeal parental notice of abortion was filed in House Bill 370, Senate Amendment 1, yesterday. That would be Tuesday. The so-called Youth Health and Safety Act. A hearing was held yesterday at 3:30 p.m. And Molly Malone Rumley, who's part of Illinois Citizens, Illinois Right to Life Group, she presented yesterday a testimony in opposition to this repeal. So that... We just gotta get your head around this, my friends. And so the pro-abortion people are saying that a minor should be able to go get an abortion without having to inform her parents. And let's just think of that. And the bill is called Youth Health and Safety Act. So, what is really deep inside these people, and this is a sad commentary, but it's obvious to me, and I hope it is to you. They label it the Youth Health and Safety Act because what are they trying to protect the youth from? Where's the safety come in this safety act? They're trying to protect the youth from their parents. The parent is the danger, and you could. It's hard to say this, but in many of their circles, they will think that the angry parent is the true danger. They don't have the sense that a parent would be forgiving and understanding and try to help raise the child. And of course, there are many parents who will get really mad and angry. And so, but that notification of the parent is a law built on the understanding that the parent is the danger.
Wow. And you just wrinkled my brain, man.
Yeah, that is brain wrinkling, I must say. And though there may be some of those people, let's hope it's the minority, right? And if this bill passes, then thousands upon thousands of good parents who wouldn't want their child to have an abortion, or it doesn't even assume that the parent will talk the child out of the abortion. It could very well be that the parent will drive the teenager to an abortion clinic, right? It's the law is not saying that the child cannot have an abortion. It's just the law is just saying the mother and father of the teenager should be notified. And of course, so many other you can't get your ears pierced, and you can't do anything as a minor without your parents' notification and sometimes approval, right? But this isn't even approval or disapproval, it's just notification. So let me read here a little bit more from Illinois Citizens for Life. The bill, as amended, passed the committee, then passed the full Senate late last Tuesday night. This should not be a cause for dismay. This is a cause for us to double our efforts and stop this bill in the House. So it's going from a committee in the Senate to the Senate, and now it goes to the House. Of course, Governor Pritzker would sign it if he gets it. The good news is that pro-life senators presented an incredibly compelling case during the floor debate, and 9 pro-abortion senators voted against repeal. or chose not to vote. Wow, that's very interesting. The fight to save parental notice of abortion now moves to the House, where the bill will likely win or lose by a small handful of votes, right? So, of course, as we often ask, call your Senate or your state House representative now. Now we don't have to worry about the senators. They did their dirty work. Now we got to appeal to the representatives, the state representatives, and ask them to oppose this bill. Here are some important facts surrounding the parental notice of abortion. 72% of Illinois voters, including 55% who consider themselves pro-choice, support parental notice of abortion, according to a March 2021 poll. A vote in favor of repeal is a vote against the wishes of a majority of Illinois voters. So in other words, like I say, I'm emphasizing the fact that this piece of legislation isn't taking a right to an abortion away from a teen. It's taking the right of a parent to know what their teen is doing. And again, built on the sad assessment of parents as enemies of their children. It's sad to say, but I'm sure there are many people who find disgusting parents. We can't argue against the fact that there do exist some, but is it the majority of parents, and is that built on a proper sense of the shadow of a doubt, or the giving of the favor should go to the good parents who love their children? It's kind of hard to establish a law on a fact that all parents hate their children. It just doesn't work that way. There may be some, but very few, right? So another part here, the vast majority of parents love their daughters and want what's best for them. Repealing parental notice tramples parents' rights to be involved in the health care decision of their children. In Illinois, minors cannot get a piercing, get a tattoo, or even get an aspirin at school without their parents' consent. It is basic common sense. Parents should simply be notified before their child has an abortion, serious medical procedure with serious implications to the life and health of their child. So that's one thing. Let me go to another before our break here. There's this is the Health Care Right of Conscience Act for COVID-19. So this is on the COVID front. So there's, and this little another good website is Illinois Family Institute. And you'll notice that I do bring up a lot of moral issues on this and many of my programs, and oftentimes I'm quoting from Protestant sources. This, my friends, is really the groundwork. This is the common ground between Protestants and Catholics when we try to develop common sense of what's moral, right, and wrong. In these instances, we could certainly then go into deeper and deeper, what's right and wrong with husband and wife, what's right and wrong with relationship to our relationship with God and all that. But here we are wallowing in the everyday life of, the romantic relations of young and old, the good and the bad that comes along with what I like to call romantic relationships. I think we all know what that is. And And we all know that there's blunders in romantic relationships. Anyways, that's a key factor. But here there's another Illinois law. State, let me just get through this here. State representatives, Robin Gabel, G-A-B-E-L, he's a, he or she is a Democrat from Evanston, and Bob Morgan, a Democrat from Highwood, and a state senator, Melinda Bush, a Democrat from Grays Lake, are sponsoring legislation, Senate Bill 1169, to diminish the Illinois Health Care Right of Conscience Act. To diminish the Illinois Health Care Right of Conscience Act, specifically for COVID-19. In other words, these lawmakers are heading up an effort to strike down existing legislation that protects citizens' rights to excuse themselves from this vaccine mandate. The proposal is narrowly designed for this current pandemic in order to get enough votes to pass in the veto session. But it sets a dangerous precedent for future public health emergencies by cherry-picking out of the current pathogen of the moment. The new proposal simply states, violations related to COVID-19 requirements. It is not a violation of this act for any person or public official or for any public or private association, agency, corporation, entity, institution, or employer to take any measures or impose any requirements, including but not limited to any measures or requirements that involve provision of services by a physician or healthcare personnel intended to prevent contraction or transmission of COVID-19 or any pathogens that result in COVID-19 or any of its subsequent iterations. It is not a violation of this act to enforce such measures or requirements, including by terminating employment or excluding individuals from a school, place of employment, or public or private premises in response to noncompliance. This section is a declaration of existing law and shall not be construed as a new enactment. Accordingly, this section shall apply to all actions commenced or pending on or after the effective date of this amendatory act of the 102nd General Assembly in Illinois. Nothing in this section is intended to affect any right or remedy under federal law. This is a top priority for Governor Pritzker and other Illinois Democrats. They are frustrated with the fact that their tyrannical vaccine mandate has a strong legal defense in the Health Care Right of Conscience Act in order to fire people from their jobs for failing to comply with this medical dictate. This conscience protection must be limited. So as often is, we ask you to fill out the witness slip. That's a new way of letting your voice be heard, I guess, in the computer age, right, where we got different uses of technology. So try to keep in your inbox the Illinois Family Institute for this one. And let's see, what was the other one from? The other one was from the Illinois Right to Life Action. Okay. Anyways, so that's our coming out of the box issues that we, moral issues that we as
God. You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Let's take a quick break. I am Father Tom Coys. You're listening to The Winds of Change on the new EWTN Catholic Radio Voice for Chicagoland, WSFI Catholic Radio on AM 750 WNDZ and on 88.5 FM WFSI.
The cold and snow is just about here. And so, Providence Soup Kitchen at St. Stanislaus Kostka is asking for donations of new or used men's winter coats. You may drop them off Monday through Thursday from 9 a.m. to 12 noon at the Soup Kitchen off the church parking lot. St. Stanislaus Kostka is located two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. Thank you for your generosity.
I'm Mary Fiorito, Winds of Change guest host, and you are listening to the Winds of Change.
St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy. St. Stan's is an exceptional private elementary school in Chicago, serving preschool age 3 and 4, pre-kindergarten, kindergarten, and first grades. We incorporate Catholic values and rigorous academic, social-emotional learning, Chinese, Spanish, STEM, and more, providing our students with leadership and life skills to transform our world. St. Stanislaus Koska Academy is conveniently located one block north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. To schedule your tour, visit ststandschicago.org. ststandschicago.org.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. God bless you. Father Tom Coy here, trying to wrinkle your brain again. I let off the show with those two things going on regarding the state trying to take away parental rights to know about their daughter going for an abortion, and the second, the state trying to remove the idea of a conscientious objection to a medical procedure, an experimental medical procedure. We have to add, and we have to continue to follow science, especially scientists who are raising all sorts of questions about the efficacy, about the effectiveness, and even harmfulness of the vaccine. And the reason, again, I'm going to sort of defend myself for being a Catholic priest who brings up moral issues, because it's so often, because moral issues intersect the world of politics and the world of religion, if and when I bring up a moral issue, it's often the case that I or anyone else is accused of mixing religion and politics, and the two, they say, should never mix. Why they say that is because they believe wholeheartedly in Thomas Jefferson's ideology of the separation of church and state, which has been drilled into us. That, I'm afraid I have to say over and over again, is a problem that we have that's growing. It was a good thing to say at the time, I guess, in terms of one religious denomination trying to beat down another. Although when Thomas Jefferson said that, you've heard me say this over and over again, I'll say it again. When Thomas Jefferson declared religious, that the wall of separation of church and state, he was trying to keep the churches from beating up on each other, giving all churches sort of an equal right under the law, that the government wasn't going to interfere with the different churches. But when he said churches, he meant Protestant churches, because the government was all too ready, willing, and able, and Thomas Jefferson himself was all too ready, willing, and able to use the government to stop Catholicism. So Catholicism was kind of kicked to the side. Now that we've sort of gained our rightful place within the political sphere, now we're seeing problems arising from that ideology that says religion and politics shouldn't mix. A true political person will see that he can't do his political work without the help of religion, and a true religious person should readily say that he can't do his full work without the help of the political branch of reality. So it's a partnership, not a separation. Okay, and the reason I think I played this before. Let's see if I can get this. This is, remember when Bishop Barron said, again, he's trying to show the great essence of Christianity is found first and foremost in the Paschal Mystery, who Christ is, and belief in his resurrection. And I just have to keep playing this, because it's going to relate to some of these other things I want to talk about. And let me see if I can get this going for you here. This is...
we're all post-Kantians. What I mean here is we tend to follow the German philosopher Immanuel Kant, who said, you know, religion is finally about ethics. So we say, you know, Jesus, sure, I love Jesus. He's a great ethical teacher.
I got to stop it there. And that's probably Immanuel Kant, of course, is a philosopher from the 1700s. And he's, Bishop Barron is right in saying that our Protestant culture and the modern world in general has sort of accepted the Kantian view, how should I say, that we don't argue too much over whether there's three persons in the Blessed Trinity or four persons in the Blessed Trinity. We don't argue whether the Eucharist is the real presence of Christ or not the real presence of Christ. We don't argue about, let's see, whether the angels exist or whether they can be divided into the categories of different kinds of angels. Okay, those kinds of things. But Bishop Barron says, let's do this again here, see if I can get it where he says
ethics. So we say, you know, Jesus, sure, I love Jesus. He's a great ethical teacher. I look at the Sermon on the Mount, I look at his great ethical teachings, and I can distill, you know, principles to live by.
Here's where I think he's missing, and this is why I think it's so important for me and others and you to connect moral issues to our faith. Because he's saying, oh, sure, the general population accepts Jesus as a moral teacher. That's half right and half wrong. Because you could say, oh yeah, Jesus teaches morals, but I don't find a lot of people trying to follow the morals of Jesus. It all comes down to, what is Jesus teaching? You see what I'm saying? To say that we all accept Jesus as a moral teacher doesn't mean we all are on the same page about morality. To just say Jesus is a moral teacher without arguing about moral issues is just to say Jesus wants, allows, and even teaches moral relativism. And that's at the heart. That's why I see when Pope Benedict, when he accused the modern world of being under the control of moral relativism, is more in tune with classical Catholicism than what the good Bishop Barron here is saying. So let me do another one here, because I'm going to put this in the category of on their way to Catholicism. On their way to Catholicism. Let's see, which one am I going to take here? This is Pastor John MacArthur. I think I don't know if I played this one before, or I know I played him before. He's one of the bigger mega church pastors in California, and I take my hat and I applaud his effort to fight the government from shutting down his church, for sure. And listen, as he's trying to relate to John chapter 6, really, he's kind of meditating on the story of the multiplication of the loaves and fishes, and how Jesus gives us his body and blood at the Last Supper. So he's on his way, and he says something about he's surprised there wasn't a riot. And that's a good insight. Let's see if we get this.
He who eats my flesh and drinks my blood abides in me, and I in him. I have to tell you, this is so shocking for the Jews in the synagogue that day that I'm surprised it wasn't a riot. Leviticus, first of all.
See, he's on his way. He sees the radicalness of that teaching. And for that, I say Pastor John MacArthur is on his way to Catholicism, right? He rightly points out how radical of a teaching that is. And when he says, I'm surprised there wasn't a riot, he's teaching this lesson. And so he sort of is on his way to Catholicism in the sense that he's feeling this doctrine of the real presence in a real way, and he's teaching it to his people from his pulpit. But then he goes off the rail, and he loses the sense of using logic when you're dealing with Almighty God. In other words, logic when you're dealing with human beings, and logic when you're dealing with human nature, obviously must take into consideration different limitations that human nature has. But if the same logic is applied to a being that is not subject to the same limitations as human nature is, i.e. divine nature, i.e. God, then you're going to have to augment your teaching, and this is where he fails. This is where he's stuck. He can't embrace Catholicism because something is blocking him from seeing what real belief in the supernatural nature and the divine nature of God really is. Let's take a break, okay, Nick? And I'll come back and I'll share that with our listeners when we come back. Anyways, you are listening to Father Tom Coyes. This is Winds of Change on the new EWTN Catholic Radio Voice for Chicagoland, WSFI Catholic Radio on AM 750 WNDZ and on 88.5 FM WFSI.
Here's some good news. We are pleased to announce that St. Stanislaus Kostka is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, in answer to our Blessed Mother's call to open the doors. The Blessed Sacrament will again be exposed all day, every day, except when Masses or other services are being held. You are invited to come and pray anytime, day or night. For your safety, we ask that you practice social distancing and wear a mask. Hand sanitizer is available, and St. Stan's has increased cleaning and sanitizing of the church, and a security person will be on site. More information can be found at ststanschurch.org. That's ststanschurch.org. St. Stanislaus Kostka is located 2 blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway.
We are the students of St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy.
Your children can join them for face-to-face classroom instruction. Visit ststanschicago.org to find out how.
And you're listening to the Winds of Change.
How long has it been since you have been to church? Busy schedule, work, or just lost interest? To be Catholic is not just merely attending Mass as just another weekend activity to be checked off the to-do list. Participation in the sacred liturgy gives you the opportunity to be intimately connected to Christ through the Holy Eucharist. You can also cleanse yourself of sin through the sacrament of reconciliation as a baptized Catholic. Come before the iconic monstrance to be in Christ's presence in the sacred silence of the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy. St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. St. Stan's is just off the Kennedy, 2 blocks north of Division on Noble. Come back to Christ through the sacred liturgy and his gift of the sacraments at St. Stan's.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. God bless you for tuning in. Father Tom Coyes here, trying to wrinkle your brain a bit. And as always, we're wrestling with moral issues and the sticky but important issue of the relationship between church and state. What else can I say? I played before the break here Pastor John MacArthur's he's on his way to Catholicism by seeing the radical teaching of Christ saying this blood is my blood and this bread is my body. He correctly says if we really understood that, or the people back there really understood, there'd be a riot. The Bible doesn't describe a riot, but it describes something else, that is, people want to leave Jesus. So not a riot, but an abandonment of sorts. And here's where Pastor MacArthur, even though he's on his way to Catholicism, and a lot of Christian churches have some sense of what we call the real presence, right? It's It's kind of neat to think that Jesus is really present in some way. All you do is have to add in some way, and then you got a non-Catholic kind of definition of the real presence, and that boy, that has to do. Remember my radio show on Karl Rahner, who's the Jesuit theologian that was very popular and influenced Vatican Council II very, very much, and how he reintroduced into Catholic moral thinking Platonic metaphysics as opposed to Aristotelian metaphysics. Do you remember that? Oh, maybe not. Maybe I'll get back to that. But anyways, John MacArthur misses the fact that divine nature is so radically different than human nature. His conclusion about what the Catholic Church teaches about the Eucharist is faulty, illogical based on the logic of the understanding of what finite nature is and what infinite nature is. Let me explain. Here's what he says afterwards. Let's see. It's going back.
I'm surprised there wasn't a riot. Leviticus, first of all, Leviticus 17, Deuteronomy 12, Deuteronomy 15 forbids Jews drinking blood. So this is, if nothing else, really insensitive. But he's not really talking about drinking blood. And this is, of course, a chapter that has been mutilated by the Roman Catholic Church, and they have used this to develop the Mass, where Christ is re-sacrificed again and again and again, and you eat his flesh and drink his blood. Just exactly what he's not talking about.
Got to stop it there. See how he... I got to explain why I think he's missing... He's applying incorrect logic to what he's saying. First of all, Pastor MacArthur is stating something as a fact, which is his opinion, when he says that's exactly what Jesus is not talking about. How does he know that, or how does he defend that position when so many of the people left his side when he taught that, like I say, there wasn't a riot, like he said, there could have been, should have been, but there was abandonment. And here's how I think his logic fails. He's saying that the Catholic Church mutilated the teaching of the real presence by saying, notice how he connects it to the sacrifice of Jesus over and over again. Obviously, he's relating it to Good Friday, right? And so, by the very fact that he's using the phrase over and over and over again, this might seem obvious, it seems obvious to me, but let me try to spell it out. By saying over and over and over again, he's talking about something in sequential time, right? You don't do something over and over and over again unless you're in time. I do my, I was going to say I do my laundry, but actually I don't. But anyways, you do your laundry over and over again. I do wash dishes over and over again, not as much as I should, but I do wash dishes over and over again. I do my exercises over and over again. And obviously, just the sense of over and over again, it only makes sense when you're a being in time, right? And this is where Pastor MacArthur and so many people have a mental block, because they're not thinking that God is outside of time. And God has to be outside of time because he has infinite nature. His nature is infinite, and therefore he's not limited by time. He's limited only in the sense that he can't contradict himself, which is not a limitation. It's a virtue. In other words, the old saying, is God so strong that he can't make a rock big enough that he can't lift? Those contradictory terms that would be a contradiction in our world, set in time and space. It doesn't make sense for it. In other words, we couldn't lift a rock. We couldn't make a rock ourselves that we could lift or couldn't lift. But God made all the rocks. God made all the planets. God made all the muscles and arms and legs that do the lifting. And so to say that God can't contradict himself is not a limitation. I see how that. And so he's missing the Catholic point that Christ in the Mass, that Christ is being sacrificed over and over again from our perspective when we go to Mass over and over again. But of course, we go to Mass over and over again in time. We go on Sunday to Sunday, or Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. But from God's perspective, who's outside of time, he's not sacrificing him over and over and over again. What the Catholic position is that because Jesus Christ is both God and man, when he did die on the cross on Good Friday, his divine nature, which is not confined to time and space, the fact that Jesus died is a fact that God died, and God is eternal. So it doesn't make sense to say he's dying over and over and over again. That's why there's this real sense of something supernatural going on in the Catholic Mass. Are you following? That we are, in a sense, peering into a world beyond our senses and what we can really touch, taste, and feel. Though we touch, taste, and feel the real host, which is the real body and blood of Christ. That's why the Mass is such a mystery and bridges the gap between God and man. That thinking about on the way to Catholicism, but gets stuck or gets sidetracked by so many. And it's not just this pastor, it's many people, it's many Catholics as well, too, who can't fully embrace the idea of the real presence includes a real sacrifice as well as a real resurrection. To be quite frank, it is a challenge to keep both a sincere and reverent appreciation for being at Mass like you are at the cross on Good Friday, while at the same time keeping a reverent and awesome spirit in your heart like you are at the tomb on Easter Sunday. Both are essentially wrapped up in our Catholic Mass. That's why there is this kind of this debate, this two sides of how do you interpret the Mass. Is it a friendly meal where you're happy and no tears allowed? don't make me think about anything that will make me sad. I want to be just happy when I go to Mass because I want to be standing at the tomb of the resurrection. I don't think many people would say it exactly like that, but that's kind of the theological way of interpreting the Church of Nice or the Happy Meal interpretation of the Mass, right? And then there's the worse kneeling at the foot of the cross as Jesus is dying. And not only are tears required, but no smiling is allowed, right? If you're seeing Jesus die on the cross, you're not supposed to be laughing or even smiling. You're supposed to be crying. And so the incredible challenge for all of us is to appreciate both. And I say that by, at times the Mass should bring us to tears. And at times the Mass should bring us to great joy and even ecstasy, as some saints have said that. So, okay, we're going to take another break here now, and I'm going to try as best I can to relate what Karl Rahner's mistake was at the time of the Second Vatican Council, and make it hopefully make sense to all these moral issues that we're struggling with these days. And if I have time, I'd like to read a little segment from Luisa Picaretta's beautiful meditations called The Book of Heaven. Okay, so let's take our quick break here, and we'll be right back. I am Father Tom Coy, sitting in for Father Anthony Bush on the Winds of Change on the new EWTN Catholic Radio Voice for Chicagoland, WSFI Catholic Radio on AM 750 WNDZ and on 88.5 FM WFSI.
Here's something that you should know about what's happening at St. Stan's. The Daughters of St. Mary of Providence Religious Order operates the Providence Soup Kitchen on the premises of St. Stanislaus Kostka Parish. The soup kitchen serves a midday meal Monday through Thursday from 11:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Anyone who needs a meal is welcome. If you can volunteer to help and serve meals on a regular basis, please call Sister Darlene at 773-870-2435. That's 773-870-2435. St. Stan's is located two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway.
I'm Father Tom Coyes, Winds of Change guest host, and you are listening to the Winds of Change.
St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy. St. Stan's is an exceptional private elementary school in Chicago, serving preschool, age 3 and 4, pre-kindergarten, kindergarten, and first grades. We incorporate Catholic values and rigorous academic, social-emotional learning, Chinese, Spanish, STEM, and more, providing our students with leadership and life skills to transform our world. St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy is conveniently located one block north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. To schedule your tour, visit ststanschicago.org. ststanschicago.org.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. God bless you for keeping going with me on the Winds of Change here, Brain Wrinkling Wednesdays. I'm going to start this segment. I don't know if I'll be able to do this, but I'm going to try to see why not only classical morality, classical religion, classical liturgy is key to a renewed church and a renewed society, even our American society, by pointing out a mistake that Karl Rahner, a Jesuit priest who was very popular at the time of the Vatican Council, and why he reintroduced the old Platonic metaphysics, as opposed to what Christianity took a long time to establish, recovering the Aristotelian metaphysics. Okay, so don't turn it off. I promise you, I'm going to try to make this make sense, and I'm going to make all of you, my listeners, a little bit interested in metaphysics. Okay, without some interest in metaphysics, we flounder and we try to build ideology or philosophy on sand. How about I just say it that way? And part of the reason why I think this is key is good old Pope Francis, in the beginning of the synodal church process and everything. You may have seen this. I don't know what news outlets it was exactly on, but he made Jeffrey Sachs a member of the Vatican Scientific Committee, whatever that's exactly called. Jeffrey Sachs, if you know that name, is number one a billionaire, and number two, he's always been on the side of abortion rights, artificial contraception rights, and on top of both those, reduction in world population. He's one of his great fears is overpopulation, and so one of his great goals is to decrease the population of the world. And so Pope Francis invites him on to the Pontifical or Vatican Science Committee. And you know, I'll say this. This might sound a little scandalous. I wouldn't mind if us in the Catholic Church invited people such as he onto a committee, if we invited him on to debate with someone who is not on the pro-abortion side of things, or the we must reduce the world population, and that could be actually a very good help, because if someone like Jeffrey Sachs is very popular in the world today and many people are following him, then putting him on a stage or on a committee where robust debate would take place, and if another scientist who's equally or even more qualified to discuss the matters of health and governmental policies and all the rest, he could cut him to shreds, so to speak, and then those who were on Jeffrey Sachs' sides might be converted, right? If you can convert someone with a bad moral position, so be it. We should try. Just like when we think of conversion and evangelization, we're going to try to convert someone from a bad theological position, such as like there is no God, or God didn't build a church, God didn't leave us the commandments, God didn't author the Bible, etc., etc. So there's all sorts of different kinds of theological conversions we want, and let's face it, there are a lot of moral conversions we should work for. And so if, as I say, the Pope were inviting Jeffrey Sachs, a guy who's steadfastly pro-abortion and steadfastly anti-population growth or pro-reduce the population, if he were in a debate, I'd gladly listen, and I would hope and pray that the pro-life vote would, the pro-life voice would win. Got it, good. So let me try to put
in context. You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Yeah. What is Karl Rahner's mistaken metaphysics? I'm going to start by reading you something I saw in a Hallmark greeting card. And it sounds nice, and I think you'll maybe smile. And it's very much in the modern world of psychology trumps philosophy or morality, as it were. Notice how you react to this I'll call it the philosophy, right? We get a lot of philosophy in Hallmark greeting cards. Most of it is not good philosophy, but some of it can be very good. And this one can be interpreted in a right way, but it also can be interpreted in a wrong way, right? And that's the key. So this is how it goes. Sometimes the road of life takes us to a place we had planned. Sometimes it shows us a surprise around the bend we could never have anticipated. We make decisions based on the information we have. We accept the ups and downs as they come. We live one day at a time. But often, we find it is only when we look back that we can see that what we had thought was a wrong turn has brought us to exactly the right place. And every step was a right one after all. It's cute. I find that cute because it does make us think of aspects in our life, times in our life when we thought all was lost, and all the decisions we made have ruined our life completely. And then he says, well, when you step back and look back, sort of God allowed these bad things, and now you're in a better place. It reminds me a little bit of the story of Joseph in the Old Testament, right? Where Joseph might say, if I paraphrase, sometimes the road in Joseph's life took him to a place that he had planned. In other words, he was first in his father's eyes, Father Jacob's eyes. Sometimes it shows a surprise around the bend, which Joseph could never have anticipated. In other words, his brothers attacked him and sold him into slavery. We make decisions based on the information we have. So his brothers made their decision to sell Joseph into slavery based on the information they had, namely, Joseph was a pain in the neck. Anyways, so we accept the ups and downs as they come. We live one day at a time, but often we find it is only when we look back that we can see that what we had thought was a wrong turn has brought us to exactly the right place. In other words, looking back, well, wasn't it sad that Joseph was sold into slavery? That was a wrong turn, but actually it brought him to the right place, namely the right side, the right-hand man of Pharaoh, and every step was a right one after all. So you can interpret the course of events as happening as a kind of a unveiling of God's plan. But notice how that kind of psychology or that kind of interpretation is easily twisted into moral relativism. In other words, you don't take this kind of review of life or the interpretation of God's providence in our life as a moral principle that will apply to everything. In other words, you don't say every step was a right one after all. Every step was a right one in a moral sense. Every step was a right moral choice. Because clearly you would want to say selling your brother into slavery is an immoral act, even though God used that immoral act for his good. So here's the point that Rahner is doing. Remember Karl Rahner, he was trying to introduce a new kind of moral thinking, and what he introduced and what became red hot popular, I guess, in Catholic theologians, and I swear I think it's probably mostly because we didn't really understand what he was saying, and I almost pray that Rahner didn't understand exactly what he was saying. So he introduced the term formal existential ethics. Okay, formal existential ethics, and what he puts that as opposed to material essentialist ethics. Okay, so since ethics is the pursuit or the study of good and evil in human actions, material essentialist ethics will never give us truth about good and evil. That's Rahner's position. Let me see if I can unpack this. Okay, the term formal existential ethics is definitely taken from Plato's idea of the forms. And if you remember from your Philosophy 101 class, Plato's idea of the forms was that we as humans don't have access to reality. The forms is the only true reality. All the things that we experience, the things we see, touch, and taste, are reflections of the real thing. And of course, we could use the simple example. I like to use simple examples to unpack this. But a real dog that we see and pat and touch is not really the form of the dog. Is in the land of forms. Ah, oh, darn, there's the music, and suffice it to say that Renner, in his Modern Theology, recovered ancient Platonic metaphysics, and so therefore you can never really know what's right and wrong, and that really fits the world of today, sad to say. Anyways, I hope I wrinkled your brain a little bit. I hope I gave you something to think about. We must pray hard and work hard. I'm Father Tom Poise. You are listening to Listener Supported The Winds of Change. This is the new EWTN Catholic Radio, Voice of Chicagoland, WSFI Catholic Radio on AM 750 and at 88.5 FM WFSI. God love you.
We marvel and flatter such meaning.